potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new movies and television series, including You Should Have Left, 7500, Baby Teeth, Blood Machines, and Good Boy. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring a look back at National Treasure. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is actually spillover from last week. This hit my desk after I'd wrapped the show, but I called it. I knew it was going to happen. They moved Tenet, and it didn't move it much. The Warner Brothers moved Tenet from July 17th to July 31st, which is an odd move because, I mean, nothing's going to be better in 2 weeks. But it does two things. First of all, it makes Mulan have to flinch if it's going to flinch. It makes Mulan the first big blockbuster return. I mean, I'm not the Russell Crowe movie, the one Unhinged, that's going to come out. I think that got moved to the 10th instead of the 1st or the 3rd, but it got moved till after 4th of July. I don't know how well that's going to do in the theater. I don't think that's going to have people come racing back to the theaters for that movie. So like the big movie, the big in terms of the big tentpole release, the thing that people say gets us back to normal, Mulan is now in the catbird seat. And Disney may or may not have to flinch. I think they were seeing what would happen with Tenet. Now, the rumor is Warner Brothers wanted to take Tenet completely off the board. They wanted to push it to, like, November or maybe next summer, which still may happen. But it was Christopher Nolan who insisted on keeping it in July. He wants to be the reason people return to the movies. He wants to give people a reason to return. And look, I understand that. I get that. I understand the theatrical experience is really cool. But this is not the movie to do it with. You know, the one movie, I've been thinking about this, the one movie that I think could have really been something that brought people back to theaters and people would risk going would have been like if this had happened last year and Avengers Endgame, the second half of a two-part cliffhanger, I could see that drag people back to the theaters. I don't know if Tenet's going to be the one to do it. Now, the other thing they're doing is they're going to do a 10th anniversary release of Inception on the 17th. And I think that's a trial run to see how well people respond to it. The other thing the move of Tenet to the end of the month does is it gives more than a two-week window after 4th of July, because we all know that all these states are going to be back open on the 4th of July, and there's going to be cookouts and celebrations and parades and fireworks, and they're going to be able to see whether we get this big spike in COVID-19 cases, which we will. We're already seeing that, actually. You're seeing that in a bunch of states like Texas and Florida and Arizona and Mississippi, all these places, some of which were the last to shut down and the first to reopen. Places like Ohio, where I'm from, in Michigan, which actually had a really stringent early crackdown, those numbers are pretty stable. And the reason they're stable is because we shut everything down. You know, places like Florida didn't shut things down. Even when it did, it kind of was playing like it was shutting them down. And now you're seeing a spike, and that's going to happen. The virus has not left. The virus is still out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Disney flinches and moves their Mulan date, and then they'll go ahead and move Tenet again. And now the other thing that's interesting is you've got some stuff that's scheduled for August, like the Bill and Ted's movie. And I actually had somebody say this to me, and I go, you know, this may not be a wrong thing. Bill and Ted may not be a great movie. I was unimpressed with the trailer I played last week. So maybe they're saying, well, let's blame it on the virus. Let's go ahead and put it out there in theaters. And if nobody goes, then we can say, well, it's a virus. It's not because the movie's bad, without having to face the fact that it's a bad movie or a movie that nobody really wanted to see right now. Now, this dovetails into a more interesting story. AMC Theaters officially announced that they're going to be opening or reopening their theaters in July. And I'm a member of the Stubbs A-List, and so because of that, I got the email from the CEO, and he has all these discussions of, all this is what we're going to be doing. We're partnering with Clorox, and we're going to be having these changes and that changes. The one thing I've noticed, and a lot of my colleagues in the film review circles have noticed, is conspicuously missing is any sort of mask requirement from the patrons. Now, you sit there and talk about HVAC filters and social distancing in the theater itself, which is, well, I'll tell you something else with that social distancing in the theater. When it comes to the larger seats, those Barca Lounger seats, it's not even going to be enforced. It's on the burden of the people who are in the theater. So there's nothing to stop somebody from sitting right next to you. You would just have to tell them to move or get somebody of authority. And herein lies the problem. AMC just wants to open. They want their business back, and I get that. But they're doing nothing to enforce it. You got to remember, this is the company that every 5 years, they're like, you know, maybe we should allow cell phones in movie theaters. And I said the last time that stupid argument came up, I go, you don't even enforce your cell phone policy. Have you ever tried to get somebody to stop using a cell phone in a movie theater? It's doggone near impossible. You got to either yell at them or talk to them. And a lot of times they just refuse. And then you either got to be passive aggressive and do something or go out and find somebody who works there to go in and tell them to stop. It is infuriating how many people just ignore the cell phone use requirements. So I think part of it is they don't want to have to worry about the mask requirements. I am not going anywhere near a movie theater where people aren't wearing masks. Social distance or not. You're spending 2 hours plus with people in air circulating all over the place and people mowing down and talking and laughing and moving around and touching everything. I'm not going back to the movie theater. And I'm going to tell that to my press reps. When it comes time to have press screenings again, I'm going to be like, look, you want me to cover Tenet? Then you got to have a press only screening at a theater that requires masks. I will not go to a public screening with a packed audience just to review a Christopher Nolan movie. Sorry, I'm not going to put my family in danger because of that. And since when did masks become a political issue? They're a preventative public health thing. Try to go to a movie sometime without wearing shoes or shirtless or pantless. They have requirements for that, and it's all based on public health. Why can't you wear a mask? You wimps who don't take personal responsibility for themselves or anybody else? My God, show a little compassion and responsibility. It is not an attack on your freedom to have to wear a mask in a public place for public health reasons, period. There is no discussion on that. The science is sound. The science is irrefutable. And it's not a political issue. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one is Greyhound, which is the Tom Hanks World War II pick. Apple TV snatched that up, and it comes out on July 10th.
Air escort to Greyhound. You will now be out of range of air cover for the next 5 days.
I got some.
Most likely a U-boat.
He's trying to slip under us!
Fire!
We have a kill.
Stress rockets, sir.
We have hits directly on the convoy.
The wolf bag's hunting us.
Looks like the effects look better than something like Midway. I never saw Midway full on, but I saw part of it. I was on a cruise ship. They were showing Midway, and it was substandard special effects, and I think that's what turned me off of Midway. That seems to at least not be the case with this Greyhound movie. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope I get a chance to see it before July 10th. Also coming out on July 10th is Money Plane. It's coming to VOD.
You owed a lot of money to some very bad people. So I bought your debt. Now you're going to have to repay me that debt. It's a legend in the underworld. And to those who know, it's the Money Plane. A bulletproof casino in the sky. Untouchable by any government agency. Whatever you want to wager on, the Money Plane has you covered. Word is they carry up to $1 billion on board in crypto and millions in cash. I want you and your crew to take down the house.
This looks like just a trashy throwaway action movie. I love Kelsey Grammer, and I think Thomas Jane's a good actor, but it does not look like it hinges on these folks at all. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about baby teeth and blood machines.
Yeah.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. The first one I want to talk about is Baby Teeth. An Australian teenager with cancer finds an unlikely romance with a homeless drug dealer who sweeps her off her feet.
You make a habit of befriending girls that are significantly younger than yourself.
Mila's obsessed with that boy.
She's a smart girl.
Mila?
That boy has problems!
So do I!
Oh, it
wasn't. I'll do anything. Can he please stay?
Mila, he threatened me with a meat prong!
You threatened my wife with a meat prong?
I don't want to hurt you.
So don't.
Moses!
I have no idea what you're feeling.
I can't feel anything because I can't breathe because you take up all the air.
This is from IFC, so it's got that independent bent to it. It is certainly not a big studio release. It is a smaller independent thing, and it would have been coming to theaters. It would have hit limited release theaters this week. That's when it was always slated for, but they're just going to VOD, which... this would have also gone on VOD. A lot of these smaller releases, especially like the stuff from IFC or something like that, they have the same day and date for theatrical release and VOD, which I find funny that movie theaters get so upset at the concept of a big movie like Trolls or Scoob or anything in the future. Who knows how this is going to shake out in the next year or so. They get offended when the idea is pushed to have an on-demand release at the same time in theater. They don't give a crap about IFC. I have never once heard the main theaters complain that IFC movies hit VOD at the same time. That's because they're showing their hand. They don't care about the theatrical window unless it's making them money. And that's the reality. You follow the money in any situation. Follow the money, and that's where you're seeing it. So Baby Teeth would have been available on demand right now anyways, regardless of the coronavirus. And this had a good festival run. It's a character study. It's not meant to be this lickety-split action flick or anything like that. And it's not meant to be a cute little rom-com either. I mean, it's the story of this teenage girl wrestling with some very normal, mundane issues, but also some heavier, strong ones that are going to cause problems for her. Now, you listen to that pitch of it, and you talk about saying it's this teenager who gets in a romance with this drug dealer. And it sounds horrifying, but the thing that's special about this movie is it's kind of sweet. The guy who's the love interest, you can tell that he legitimately cares about her, and he legitimately does not want to hurt her. So it's not like he's taking advantage of her, but there are times when, with anything, with somebody who's an addict or somebody who's using or even somebody who's dealing, they sometimes... blur that line a little bit. I mean, and you hear it in the trailer, there's a scene where he breaks into her house at night and tries to steal some pills. And then the mom catches him and he pulls out a meat fork, but he's not going to hurt her. And she just takes it from him because, you know, he doesn't want to hurt anybody, but this is sort of his, it's the way he does things. And he's never had to stop. He's never had to change this. And she is making him a better person, but it's a long journey for something like that. And he's giving her somebody to focus on. And it is kind of this sweet little relationship. And I also like the fact they have the parents. The father's played by Ben Mendelsohn. And he's really good in this. He's good in everything he does. But it shows these parents not trying. I mean, what are they going to do? Bar her from seeing them? They're likely never going to see the girl grow up because she has this terminal cancer. So they want to give her her love story. They want to give her her time with him. They don't want her to feel like she's been oppressed by them her whole life. And that's a real emotional thing. And it shows when you're dealing with something that is always persistent in your life, you know, something like a cancer diagnosis or a sick child, you never escape that. It is exhausting and it drains you spiritually and physically and emotionally. And they address that there. The movie itself is not my kind of movie, but I recognized a lot of interesting elements to it, which I thought were different. It was different than what you'd see with this movie if you pitched it, I don't know, to somebody else making it in America instead of this Australian woman who made it, which makes it kind of sweet. I didn't love it because it's not my kind of movie, but I recognize it's extremely well done. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to jump into another review of a movie called Blood Machines. I know, isn't that charming? This is actually an exclusive on Shudder, and Shudder is a horror and science fiction, but mostly horror streaming service. It's like $5 a month. It's not that much to have. Now, Blood Machines, it's an exclusive movie. It's actually a movie, and it was broken into three parts. So it's basically got three chapters, these three 20-minute or so chapters, but all they did is just splice up the movie so it could... I don't know why they made it a TV series instead of just a standalone movie, because it could have been either. But the story follows an AI assassin who attempts to destroy a rogue computer that has gained sentience and physicality and is traveling through the galaxy.
I've never seen so many wrecks. Maybe they had souls, too. A man my age holds certain beliefs.
Now, your prey is mine. First of all, I have to say this is a striking movie visually. It is one of the most unique looking films I've seen in a long time. It has this retro look and feel to it, but it also has a look and feel that feels very beyond its time. It's very colorful. It's almost psychedelic. It has this fantastic soundtrack that's very synth and powerful rock. I mean, something like, you know, maybe like, you know, something that Daft Punk would do. Or if you've ever seen the movie Beyond the Black Rainbow, which was a science fiction thriller from 4 or 5 years ago, that's another one that has a great soundtrack that is completely out of the box. And it's basically about this guy. He's like a Blade Runner. I think they even refer to him as a Blade Runner. He's like a Blade Runner who's trying to wipe out this machine before it goes off on its own, and it's taken physical form of this naked woman, which that speaks to me. But it's a fascinating looking movie. The story and character development is a little slim. But that's okay. I mean, this is one of those movies that is so outstanding in its look and feel and presentation that it's just jaw-dropping. It reminds me of when I first saw Moulin Rouge. I just couldn't take my eyes off of it. It's such a visual feast. It was so visually interesting. I could care less what the story was. I just was enthralled with it. And that's like a Baz Luhrmann type thing. And that's what I feel like here. I don't know who the guy is who directed this. I think it's a guy who's he's European or something. But it is a fascinating looking movie. It's a beautiful looking movie. It is expertly put together, and at its core, rock solid speculative fiction, because it's looking at the nature of consciousness and reality and sentience and whether or not AI is totally created, or if it becomes something beyond that, and does it transcend the level of just a computer program. Like I said, the writing itself isn't great, but it's smart enough to back off and give you less rather than try to over-explain or overwrite it. I would rather have something like this that's kind of underwritten and feels very ethereal and interpretative, like 2001, rather than having somebody beat you over the head with an explanation. So I'm going to have to say that Blood Machines on Shudder totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about You Should Have Left and 7500. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with You Should Have Left. Kevin Bacon stars in this thriller about a family vacationing in a Welsh home that appears to be haunted.
What are you doing?
26 feet. 21. This room is 5 feet longer on the inside than it is on the outside.
How does that work?
It doesn't.
Anything yet?
Hello. Hello.
You chose this place, not me.
You sent me the link.
I absolutely did not. You sent it to me. Do you like it here?
No. Do you?
I hate it.
This was another one that was going to be coming out this summer, but it ended up pivoting to VOD. And it's a Blumhouse movie. If you don't know much about Blumhouse, I mean, I've talked about Blumhouse in the past, but the basic thing is Blumhouse makes its movies on the cheap. And not that they're cheap. They're not like a Roger Corman cheap. They're efficient. I mean, if you look at this movie, it's got a cast of essentially three people. It's got Kevin Bacon, Amanda Seyfried, and the girl who plays their daughter. And they have a couple scenes at the beginning where they're interacting with other people, and there's like a scene where he goes to a shop in town. But 90% of the movie is just the three of them. So the cast requirements are very slim. The locations are very... By the time they get to the house, which happens in the first 15 minutes, everything's in the house. So you don't have a lot of places that you have to travel to. I mean, you can shoot some of it you can do in a studio, and the rest of it you can do in the exteriors and in this house. So when I say they make a movie on the cheap, they're just making it efficiently, and that's part of what I love about this. Now, it's written and directed by David Kep, and it's based on a book. Now, if you don't know who David Kep is, he did movies like, oh, what was that? There was that movie about Joseph Gordon-Levitt riding the bike. I forget what that was. He's best known for writing the screenplay for Jurassic Park. But he's written and directed a bunch of other movies. He's a well-known screenwriter in Hollywood, and he's done a bunch of films. He's directed a couple here and there. Some are good, some are bad. But this is a very typical, potentially haunted house story. And I say potentially haunted house because it's not just that simple. It's not as simple as just a ghost in there. A lot of it is stuff that has to be revealed. Now, like the first two-thirds of it are dealing with more pragmatic issues. They're married, but it's his second wife, and there's a thing that had happened with his first wife that gets explained. And of course, they have a daughter, but Amanda Seyfried plays an actress who's a little bit of a flibbertigibbet, and they're having some troubles in their marriage, and you're watching that sort of bubble over, and you know, it starts off, oh, I love you, but you put people in the house isolated for long enough, they start to fight. And both of them do a really good job. I mean, of course, Kevin Bacon is significantly older than Amanda Seyfried, but I think it works for the movie that it is, because she's a young actress. He was a banker who had some crimes suggested against him, in addition to some other stuff, but he's been acquitted, but he's got baggage. And I think they do a good job running off of each other, but the first part of it is really just the pragmatic relationship issues. And it mines things that are traumatic in their past. It mines thoughts of guilt, which are things that you use in horror movies a lot. They're used to set the story on edge. They're used to give the excuse to have the haunting or the obsession or the connection to whatever's off and is happening. And so they're in this house having to deal with this, but eventually things spin off of the actual pragmatic relationship, and you're seeing much more of a spiritual side, and you're starting to see the supernatural elements. And that's, I know a lot of people prefer that. I prefer that. I mean, if I get annoyed when I watch a movie and the trailer promises something really cool and supernatural, and then you watch the movie and you're just like, oh, no, it was a Scooby-Doo ending, where it's just, you know, some guy in a mask doing something. They don't do that here. But I will say this. If you've watched enough thrillers and scary movies and movies that deal with haunted houses and repressed feelings of trauma and guilt, you're going to be able to predict certain things in this. This movie's not all that veiled. If you're not used to these movies, you might be surprised at a lot of stuff, but nothing really came out of nowhere for me. I thought things were shot well, and it was paced well, and it was put together properly. I've just seen too many of these movies that I could kind of predict what was going on. But still, I mean, it's an effective film. 90 minutes long, it's a nice little Friday night thriller. You know, it's on VOD right now. It's something new to watch. You haven't seen it yet. So I'm going to have to say You Should Have Left Kinda Rocks.
It kinda rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is 7500. Joseph Gordon-Levitt stars as a co-pilot of a German plane that is hijacked after leaving Berlin.
European Logic 2, what's your emergency?
We have a 7500.
Open the door!
Several men attacked our cockpit. We stopped them from now. The captain is injured. Status of the crew, I don't know.
They have a hostage. They're going to kill him if I don't open the door.
You want other guys to die?
Don't stop, please.
I can't open the door.
absolutely, but you know that under no circumstances you are allowed to let them into the cockpit.
If you work together, you can beat them.
This is available on Amazon Prime, and it's a little bit of a gimmick movie. You know, 7500, if you don't know anything about airliners, 7500 is the distress call for a hijacked plane. The story follows him as a co-pilot, and almost the entire movie takes place in the cockpit. There's a couple, I think there might be a couple exterior shots, and then a lot of the other shots, at least the setup shots, are security video, and you're seeing sort of a setup done in the airport as the hijackers are getting what they need to do in the airport to hijack the plane. But once Joseph Gordon-Levitt shows up and he gets into the cockpit, it never leaves the cockpit. And I think that's an interesting choice. It makes it a really challenging film to do because, you know, an airplane cockpit is not very big. There's more space in a Volkswagen Beetle than there is in the cockpit of an airliner. And so they managed to have this entire film take place in there. And I think that's a challenge. I think for the most part, the directing of it, it manages to balance that because it didn't feel like it got boring from that perspective, because there's enough things happening outside that you can see through the exterior door camera. The biggest problem I had with this movie, I gotta admit, was I didn't like the character that Joseph Gordon-Levitt played. And I get it. Part of it is he's just a mild-mannered, everyday guy who is faced with something horrible. So he kind of makes a lousy action star. And it's really easy for me sitting on my couch watching this going, I'd do better. I don't know if I'd do any better. I might have been killed in the first 2 minutes of a movie like this. But you'd like to see the focus of the movie be a little more creative in his thinking. I mean, he does certain things that you're just like, well, why don't you do that? Like, why don't you depressurize the cabin? Doesn't everyone pass out? I don't know if that's a real thing. But I mean, that's an option, and you have literally have control of the plane, so you can move things around up and down. And I mean, if you remember the movie United 93, which was about the hijacking that ended up crashing in Pennsylvania on 9/11, that movie, the people were storming the cockpit, the passengers were storming the cockpit, and the hijacker was flying the plane up and down and back and forth so that nobody could get their footing, and so there's like things like that was based in reality, and I'm just. I watched the movie and I'm like, well, he could have done something differently, or, you know, when you second guess something that seems pretty obvious, that's a flaw in the film. And there's too much of that happening in this movie where he is kind of a scared little rabbit. And I probably would be too. My God, I've never been in that situation. I don't know if I'd come out looking like Captain America or I would come out looking like, staying on the sidewalk, but you'd like to think if the movie's about that character, you want to see more of that. So that's the big albatross around this movie's neck is he's not as good of an action star as you'd want him to be. And he could have done more and still not have been a caricature. But the biggest thing I thought was interesting is keeping it all in the cockpit, which was a fascinating way to do it. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the movie Good Boy and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring National Treasure.
Who let the dogs out?
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Normally at this time, I would end up doing box office. I do want to take a quick moment to point some things out, because while there's not much box office happening, the last couple weeks we've seen an uptick in box office. Part of that's because some theaters have opened. Like, for example, and I don't have the numbers for this week yet, but last week, I think the total number of theater sites, places that showed movies, was over 700. It was like, I think the number I have is 714. Now, 275 of those are drive-ins, but that still means that, 450 of those are brick-and-mortar theaters? Now, a lot of them are independent theaters. The chains hadn't opened yet last week. But for 714 theaters, that's maybe one-tenth of the number of sites we have. I think it's a little more than 1/10. It's probably about 12 or 13, 15%. But we have about 6,000 theater sites in this country, or North America. I think that includes Canada. But at 714, that's up from the previous week, which was 511. But here's the thing. If you look at the total cumulative box office over the last couple weeks, you know, leading into the pandemic, I mean, it was less than $100,000 when there were only a handful of theaters open, and it's moved up. And last week, it was about $500,000 for the entire box office for the entire weekend. Those 714 theaters made about $500,000 total. And if that's 10%, you multiply that by 10, that's only a $5 million box office. Multiply that by 100, and you still have a $50 million. For the cumulative box office to be $50 million, that's a terrible number. You need the box office in the summer for these movies like Tenet and Mulan. You need the box office, the weekend box office, to be hundreds of millions of dollars. This is like 3% of what it needs to be. So that's another thing to realize is while there are still 714 theaters out there that are open, you still don't have people going and spending the money that they've had in the past. I mean, there's a lot that needs to happen. And that's, of course, assuming that the virus doesn't get a surge or just continue its, because we're still on the primary surge. We haven't gone down enough nationally to be considered through that first wave. The second wave may not even happen until next year. At least that's what the health experts are saying. So, you know, box office is important, but you need people to go, and people clearly aren't going in the numbers that they would need for these things to open up. And now maybe it'd be different if you have different movies in there, but still, I mean, this is a long, complicated process that is going to take some time. Right now, I want to talk about the movie Good Boy, part of Hulu's Into the Dark series, which is basically it's a monthly movie that they release from Blumhouse, and it's a small budgeted horror film. And this one, Judy Greer plays a lonely woman who adopts an emotional support dog that might just be a murderous monster.
I am 39. I've had a couple bad dates. I wanted something kind of different.
Were you waiting for me?
Oh, I love you.
So, are you seeing anyone?
Just the one I adopted.
He's an emotional support dog. He can feel when I get anxious.
Take a deep breath.
How did you do this? You're only 10 pounds.
This was released last week, actually, as part of Pet Appreciation Week. One of the things they do with Into the Dark is they relate the movie to whatever's going on that month, like Mother's Day or Christmas or something like that. So they did Pet Appreciation Week, and I had to laugh at this movie. I wanted to see it. I thought it'd be interesting. I love Judy Greer. I think Judy Greer, not only I think is she a beautiful woman, but she's a great actor. She can play weird really well, but she can also play like normal, like mother type. She's been playing that a lot, like in Jurassic World, because once you get to your 30s, that's what Hollywood gives you. But she can also play very attractive. She's a beautiful woman, and so she has a lot of versatility, and I think she's got a real knack for comedy, but also for drama as well. She's a great actor. So I wanted to see this movie, and I love dogs, so this is kind of a fun little film. And I have to say, it's very funny. I may have to check out more of these Into the Dark movies, because it's really hard to do horror comedies. Now, there's tons of them out there. And there are some that are just overtly horror films with a little bit of comedy to it. And then there are some that are comedies that just take place in a horror environment. Toxic Avenger is not a horror movie. It's not a science fiction. It's a comedy. It is a straightforward slapstick comedy. And it just has a horror movie setup. That's kind of like everything you get from Troma. Guardians of the Galaxy is a science fiction movie that has a lot of comedy in it. But it's, at its core, a science fiction film. Like Shaun of the Dead, that's one that really mixes the genre well, because it's both a comedy and a horror movie, but I would classify that as a comedy with horror elements to it. And Good Boy, it works as a horror movie, but it's sort of this lighthearted horror movie, but the comedy is mined not from slapstick and craziness, but from almost shocking moments. And so it's for people who like horror. If you don't like gore, don't watch this movie. But it's also a lot of fun, because one of the problems with these movies is it's hard to find a balance on whether the dog is evil or whether the dog is just being who he is. And they never quite answer that. And so it doesn't turn into this thing where they're hunting the dog at the end. It just shows the dog as the dog just might not be a normal dog. But I got to say, it's a funny movie, but it's also works as a little bit of a grisly horror film. So I'm going to have to say Good Boy, part of Hulu's Into the Dark series, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on the National Treasure movies, well, really just the first one, because I don't think we have much time for its sequel. Part of it is I've been looking at some old stuff on Disney Plus. I've been looking at old stuff on various streaming services in addition to the new stuff, and I like to pull out these older movies that kind of just disappeared and people kind of don't talk about anymore. But you know what? This is available on Disney Plus. So if you got Disney Plus, you can stream this and its sequel, Book of Shadows. Nicolas Cage stars as a treasure hunter who uncovers clues and conspiracy theories about a priceless treasure interwoven in our nation's history.
You're treasure hunters, aren't you?
We're more like treasure protectors.
All his life, Benjamin Gates has searched for a treasure no one believed existed.
Don't you get it, Ben? The treasure is a myth.
Dad, I refuse to believe that.
But what he thought was the final clue...
108 years of searching and I'm 3 feet away.
...is only the beginning.
The Declaration of Independence. Ian's gonna try to steal it. The only way to protect the Declaration is to steal it.
What?
I'm gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
This was at a time where Nicolas Cage ruled the box office. This was in his heyday, early 2000s. Long before he had all the divorce problems and started taking every single crappy movie that came around the corner for him. I mean, now he sort of rules the discount bin at the dollar store where you can buy a Blu-ray for a buck. But this was at a time where he was a very high paid star. I mean, this is long before he did that Left Behind masterpiece. but he also, this is when he was doing stuff like Ghost Rider and Knowing and Next. I mean, a lot of these movies from the first decade of the century. And it's also directed by John Turteltaub in a time when the Jerry Bruckheimer look, that sort of Michael Bay Jerry Bruckheimer look, that slick, sizzly, sepia tone, that's when that was very popular. And this is a fun movie. And it does, for the most part, hold up. It is a little bit goofy with the sort of early 2000s action, but it's still a lot of fun. The conspiracy stuff does get a little bit tiresome, especially in a day and age where there's... Look, I think conspiracy theories are fine, and they're fun, and it's always, kind of a jazz to read about them and be like, oh, maybe that's true, and everybody's got their own little conspiracy theories that they believe. But conspiracy theories are getting a little bit almost too real at times. I mean, to the point where there are people that are way higher in the government that are believing conspiracy theories than ever should. And that's when it becomes, okay, well, now it's no longer fun. When it's just, a bunch of people speculating in their basement and posting stuff on the internet, that's one thing. But if you got people out there making policy who believe some of this stuff, I get a little bit nervous about conspiracy theories now. But, a lot of this stuff is silly and over the top, and it's got all the stuff with the Knights Templar, and they've got all the stuff with the Masons, and back when you could listen to Art Bell, and it was a lot of fun to listen to Art Bell as spout off about the crazy stuff, it's fine. But and now it cuts almost a little too close to the bone at times. But still, it's an enjoyable movie. I mean, I'd say go back and watch it. It's a nice little fun adventure. It's absurd and stupid and silly. It would never happen. But overall, National Treasure and its sequel kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases this week on DVD and Blu-ray include The Quarry and the Universal Horror Collection, Volume 5. That is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about the new films Irresistible and My Spy. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.